Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of TechNet Radio Windows 10 series. I'm Yang Zhou, your host, a technology evangelist at the Microsoft. Today, we're going to talk about deployment. What are the ins and outs of deploying Windows 10? With that, we have an expert online with us. That is Kevin Remdy. Kevin, are you on the line?
I'm here. Hi, Yang. Good to talk to you again.
Hi, Kevin. You know what, for our audiences, just tell us a little bit about yourself and what do you do, what's your favorites and stuff, things like that.
All right. Well, we'll be talking about one of my favorites today, which is Windows 10 deployment. And certainly one of my jobs at Microsoft is to talk to as many IT professionals as possible. So my official title is technology evangelist or technical evangelist. Like you, I loved covering this technology and really getting the word out about what you can do. And of course, in particular, with regard to deployment today.
Well, thank you. You know, Kevin, not like we don't trust you or anything, but we just want to make sure that you're telling us truth. With that, we also have another expert on the line with us just to make sure watching your back. That is Dan Stoltz. Dan, are you on the line?
I'm here, Young. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Dan.
Well, Dan, tell us a little bit about yourself as well.
Yeah, sure. So I've been with Microsoft about 7 years. I'm a chief technology strategist. Basically, I'm a public speaker and help businesses figure out how to leverage technology to solve their business problems. And you know what? When it comes to Windows 10 and deployment, there's some just awesome capabilities built into Windows 10. So we're really seeing that that Windows 10 solves a lot of business problems.
Well, thank you, Dan. Now, I am just so excited to have both of you on the line because I know we're going to get a lot out of today in terms of Windows 10 deployment. Now, as of today, I know Microsoft has exceeding more than 200 million installation out there. So it's a big population out there that have Windows 10 already. Now, for those who have not or want to deploy Windows 10, you know what? I'm just going to throw this open question to you, Kevin. Where do I start for Windows 10 deployment?
Well, I'll tell you what, actually the answer to where you start with Windows 10 deployment is actually not with Windows 10 deployment. And the reason I say that is because Internet Explorer actually, probably at the time of that this video is released, although we're just right now at the time of this recording, it's a few days off. Internet Explorer 11, it will be the only version that is actually supported on operating systems like Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1. Microsoft made the decision that we couldn't support older versions of the browser that older than the one that is most current that does run on that operating system. So with Windows 7, you can install IE 11. And so we're really encouraging people to move to Internet Explorer 11 as soon as possible. And in fact, we did set that deadline for support to be January 16th. So if this is past January 16th and you haven't yet rolled out IE 11 or considered how you're going to do that, you do need to do that. The beauty of that is, the benefit of that is, you're in good shape then for Windows 10. Then IE doesn't have to be one of the additional areas of compatibility that you have to concern yourself about. And Internet Explorer 11, although this is not an IE 11 session per se, there are a lot of things that we've done to make it work really, really well, to make it very compatible with older applications, older document types. The enterprise mode is what you should consider looking into if you haven't looked into it yet, in order to get that compatibility that you need. So first things first, get to IE 11. Then the second priority would be then to consider rolling out Windows 10.
Well, I see. So you're saying as you're planning your IE, you should really combine that with Windows 10.
You should, and actually even prioritize it over Windows 10. If it's a choice of what I'm going to roll out now, if I don't have IE 11 running on all those Windows 7 machines, that's really the first thing you should do. Because nothing older than IE 11 is supported currently by Microsoft.
And you know, Kevin, I'm going to double check everything you said. So Dan, is that right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, let me just add to this. When it comes to Windows IE 11, there's really no reason not to. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to do it because you've got a lot of extra security, a lot of extra capabilities. You have the backwards capability. You have additional capabilities from a management standpoint. And when it boils right down to it, support is just so huge. Don't run a browser that is not supported, period. Bottom line, just do it. Kevin's right on. You've got to make that a super high priority to get all those machines running IE11 today.
Well, I tell you what, I have two established experts told me that I need to get an IE11. I'm in. So my next question was, well, you know what? A lot of people talk about IE or talk about bringing in a new operating system or new platform, the first question coming up is compatibility. So are we compatible?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. The good news is, since you know, we no longer support XP and businesses have moved to Windows 7, changes to the operating environment with regard to application compatibility, the platform that those applications run on, whether they be desktop apps or the new modern apps, now called universal apps, whether they be drivers or security settings, these are all things that have not changed, actually. And so the good news is your application is very, very likely, unless it's something in the installation that's checking a version incorrectly, very, very likely those applications will run just fine on Windows 10. So what we're telling people is, you know, you could inventory all 3,000 of your business apps. You certainly could do that. You could test every single one of them. But the point is, you probably have a subset of that that is actually the apps that you really, really depend upon in your business. So we recommend you test those. And just assume that the others are going to be okay. Now, there may be some cases, and you might have a test. Once you start rolling it out, you'll take certain people from certain groups, provided you have a good subset or good representation of the different disciplines in your organization, the different applications they need. And that'd be the second step. So the first step, really do test just the top apps. Second step would be to roll it out to individuals from different departments to make sure you make a good coverage of the remaining apps. And I think you're going to find that you're not going to have many issues with compatibility. Now, if you do, of course, then you want to address that at that time. But it doesn't mean you have to inventory and test every single one of those 3,000 applications, because you're only going to find two or three that have any issues, and those are probably going to be easily addressed either with a new version or some shim, which you kind of last resort put a shim around it that tricks the operating system into running that application.
Okay, so let's say I believe you totally. So Dan, if I'm in Windows 7, I'm still in a Windows 7 environment. To move with Windows 10, I mean, in terms of application compatibility, how's my chance in terms to transition in a smoothly?
Well, so nobody can tell you, you know, with 100% certainty that all your applications are going to work. You know, we didn't make any major changes like changing driver models or anything like that that inherently cause things to break. There are some, you know, there are some very, very, very significant changes in Windows 10, but they're all, you know, security stuff. So if developers are doing their job right, frankly, you won't have any issues. If developers are taking shortcuts and doing stupid things, then yeah, there's a possibility that those things will break. The reality is, though, I totally agree with Kevin's approach, and we'll talk more about that as we get into really Windows as a service. It's really more important for us to think about deployment in a different way, because, you know, you're leading with app compatibility, but I'm not even really sure that that's the right lead-in story. Because it's really more about, to me, Windows 10 is more about the potential that it unlocks for your users. And then we have a great story around how to do that easily and how to solve the app compatibility problem fairly easily. And as we get into Windows as a Service, we'll go into much more detail on that.
Well, Dan, you're all over the place, but I just want to know, hey, if I'm in Windows 7, is it fair to say that I had a good chance to migrate into Windows 10 smoothly?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I want to know. All
right.
So
most of the time, it's going to be 100%.
Okay. So I'm in. So I know how to start. I need to plan IE together as well. I know I'm going to get high compatibility. Now, the next thing is what kind of tools I have, because obviously I need to do some survey. I need to do inventory. I need to look at what I have established already. So what kind of tools I have?
Well, I tell you, good news is the tools that you have already that you're using for deployment very likely will work just great with Windows 10. There's not much that has really changed with regard to existing tools and tooling. However, we do have some newer versions that will help you move and manage as well as deploy Windows 10. And I'd like to talk about those two topics, management of an operating system as well as deployment. So if you're using System Center Configuration Manager 2007, it's going to work great for management, but it's not going to be a tool that you can actually use to deploy Windows 10. And that's actually the same as it was with Windows 8.1. So those that are still on 2007, the Configuration Manager, you're already in that area. You need to upgrade that if you want to deploy Windows 10. System Center 2012 with Configuration Manager 2012 with Service Pack 2, Configuration Manager 2012 R2 with Service Pack 1, those both can both manage and deploy Windows 10. So you'll have the pieces in place, not only for management, but also for deployment of the new operating system. We also had what was previously known as vNext, the newest version of Configuration Manager. It's actually been released recently. We're calling it Current Branch version 1511. Now, it's an interesting naming of Configuration Manager because that actually implies, oh, 1511, isn't that the most recent version of Windows 10? And indeed it is. We're using the same servicing model. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But that same idea of frequent releases is applying now to Configuration Manager. And you can understand why. The point is that we want to make sure that Configuration Manager is as up-to-date as possible for the sake of managing and deploying the most recent version of Windows 10 and any additional capabilities that may come with it as time progresses. So we do have this new version of Configuration Manager 1511. We also have the MDT, the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit 2013. There's an update one. This is a re-release that we had. The first version had a few bugs in it, so they addressed that, and then we're able to release the MDT. So the MDT 2013 with update one, with this re-release version, is able to do the deployment of Windows 10. And we're going to talk a little bit more detail about the MDT and some of the tooling around that in a little bit here. I think Dan's going to be covering that, even possibly in another TechNet Radio session. So.
Yeah, let me chime in just a little bit on that too. And The reality is, there's a ton of tools out there available to help you with your deployment. And in particular, we are going to have another episode of TechNet Radio where we go into a lot more detail on the Automation Deployment Toolkit. But really, all of the tools that we talk about in all of the deployment, they all use each other. So Config Manager, MDT, Automation Deployment Toolkit, User State Migration Tool, all the things that we're going to be talking about. They all help each other do one job: make deployment easy. And it's for all different sizes of companies. Whether you're a small company and you don't have a large infrastructure, there's tools for you. If you're a large company that needs to have zero touch, there's tools for you for that. So the reason why we have so many tools is because there's so many different environments out there that we want to cater to.
Cool. So we got tools. Then when we actually do an upgrade, I know that I don't know you guys, but I love in-place upgrades. That is just so cool for me, so convenient for me. So what kind of option I have with that? I mean, is in-place upgrade a good solution?
Yeah, well, not only is it a good option, it's actually the recommended option. I mean, it's really a great way to do it. And we've improved that to such an extent that you can actually do an in-place upgrade, even versions back from what was traditionally the N-1 version that we only allowed in-place upgrades for. So yes, you can upgrade from Windows 7, from Windows 8, Windows 8.1, onto Windows 10. So, traditionally, I mean, that's kind of different from what we've always done in IT, right? In IT, we've a lot of times had to do kind of a wipe and load process. We've used tools like Configuration Manager or the MDT to run a process, to run a task sequence that actually backs up the user's files and settings, installs the operating system, installs applications, then installs restores the files and settings, and so on. So these task sequences could be very long and complex. And we've had great templates that make it a little bit easier, but all the steps were basically a wipe it and load it and then try to restore as much as we can on top of it. So it was an okay experience, but it was complex. It was some major engineering involved. What we're doing now with an in-place upgrade is just that. We're actually recommending that. And in fact, the task sequences are much more simple. There's a really main part of that task sequence, which is basically running setup.exe with some command line parameters and let Windows do the work at that point. So that's the recommended option. Now, there is a third option called provisioning. The idea with provisioning a machine is that, let me talk about a scenario. I want my users to be able to pick their own device. So I want to be able to say, instead of saying, here's a list of supported devices, and I've got images all set up ready to go with all the drivers needed for this subset of machines that I know I can support. No, instead I want to say, here's $2,000, buy your machine. You buy your machine, comes with Windows 10 Pro on it, and then you run through some kind of a provisioning process, and I'll talk about that in a little greater detail in a little bit here. But the idea being, I've got a machine that's running Windows 10. It's got all the drivers that I need all set there that's ready for the hardware. The provisioning can do things like upgrade the SKU. So now I'm moving from Pro to Enterprise. It can do things like adding applications or joining the machine to the domain, a number of things. So we can actually provision it after the fact without having to actually do the full wipe and load like we've traditionally had to do with a new hardware that comes in, or incurring the additional cost that it would be to tell the OEM, hey, could you add all this image for me on the machines that I'm deploying? I don't have to do that anymore. So that's a good thing.
Dan, you look very serious when I talk about in-place upgrade. I mean, obviously, I know you're probably on the other camp of wipe and load. But
Kevin mentioned something
quite interesting.
Yep.
Is all these options we have, and also it looks like is it possible if I just get a machine, I will be able to get configured? I mean, it seems to me that there's a lot of options I can do.
You can, and the reality is, as time goes on and more people get used to the technology and how to use the technology, the whole world of upgrading operating systems is gone. It's just the whole pain that used to be upgrading operating systems is going to go away, and it's going to go away with this version of Windows. This is not something you're going to see 20 years from now. This is something you see now, this year. Do it now, and you won't have to do it again. So the real issue or the real question needs to be really why shouldn't you do an in-place upgrade? Because in almost every case, you're going to do an in-place upgrade. And there are some cases where you can, and I think it's more important for our audience to understand those.
Okay, and we'll be actually talking about that in just a second here. I did want to add one more point. I talked about the task sequences, and I actually have a slide that shows, and I know it's going to be added to the video here, so I'll talk to it right now, this moving in place. The notion that whether it's Configuration Manager or the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, in those cases, and those of you that are familiar with that, you're looking at this slide, you might be thinking, wow, that looks a little bit different. And those task sequences look really small. And again, that's because it's basically just run setup.exe with a couple parameters that say, do the in-place upgrade for me and let Windows do the work. Now, if I have some customizations that I want to do, and that's another reason why wouldn't I just put the media in and give everybody a ability to run setup directly on their own machines? Now, there still might be some customization that you want to do. Maybe you want to upgrade a version of an application at some point, and so you decide that part of the task sequence will be to uninstall that application, run the setup, and then install that newer version of the application. So you don't want to get too involved with that, because at some point you might say, well, that's as much work as doing a wipe and load. I might as well do that. So you'll make that determination. But you have that benefit of being able to have a shortened, much more simple, more easily managed setup.exe, basically the main engine part of that task sequence.
You know, I actually have two questions. You just kind of triggered that, and I want to ask you that. Let's say I have a whole bunch of Win32 apps. I mean, would that be an issue in terms of compatibility? Another thing is, if I still have like a x86 machine and I'm going to get into 64-bit, because the hardware refresh and all that. I mean, in terms of in-place upgrade, I mean, would I be able to do that? Or looks like Dan is kind of getting ready to be excited as I do the wipe and load.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of why I cut Dan off too, because I do want to talk to that. There are sometimes in some cases where you would not want to do the in-place upgrade, or things, or times where it just simply won't work. And yeah, that is the moving to a different architecture, certainly of the hardware, you're not able to do that. You can't take what's installed as the 32-bit version of Windows and upgrade that to a 64-bit version of Windows. No x86 to x64. If you're using Windows to Go, if you have Windows to Go installation, you're running it off a USB stick, or if you have booted a system in a boot to VHD configuration, so you're actually running a VHD file as if it's the hard disk, these are places where an in-place upgrade will not work. If you are running BIOS, and you want to move to UEFI, so you want to have that benefit of the secure boot, you can't go directly to that. Now, you can upgrade a BIOS configured machine if you have Windows 7 running in BIOS. You can upgrade that machine, but you still won't have UEFI. So you'd have to do some initial engineering to either automate that process or simply repartition, reconfigure the startup, and then actually reinstall the operating system. So it's not really an upgrade in that case. There's a couple others, so let me just finish this list here. Boot to a dual boot. So if I have a system that is set up to boot different operating systems. And I've got the bootloader configured, so I list the operating systems and I can choose which one I want to do. Well, you can certainly upgrade the one that you happen to be running at the time, but it's probably going to be resetting the bootloader, so you only have that one option. Now, later on, you could probably modify that bootloader, but there's no guarantees. It's a little tricky at that point. Sysprep, can I sysprep an upgraded operating system? Perhaps I want to take my master image that I've got with Windows 7. I want to use that as a starting point for a deployment of Windows 10 as images, or maybe use that image as an upgrading operating system. Then that actually is not supported. So you can't actually take a Windows 7 machine. You can do the upgrade, but you can't run sysprep on it after you've done that. Sysprep will actually give you an error because we don't allow you to actually use that upgraded operating system as an image for an image deployment. So that's a place where it won't work.
On that, Kevin, it's also important, I think, to note is right now, not such a big deal, right? Because Windows 10 is Windows 10, but 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 2 years from now, as there's new updates to Windows 10, people are like, well, can I just, upgrade my golden image? You know, I've been using it for the last 9 months and I want to just get all this stuff in there. Can I just, take that golden image, update it, and sysprep it again? And the answer is no, because that's hard coded. The sysprep won't actually allow that functionality. So, right. That's definitely a big deal.
Yeah. Another thing to watch for is if you have disk encryption. So if you're using a third-party disk encryption technology, and I say third-party because this does work with BitLocker. So if you have BitLocker in place, you're good. Microsoft knows how to work with BitLocker. Certainly, it's our product. But if you're using some other tool to encrypt your disk, have checked with that vendor because we've made our APIs available to them so that we should be able to work with them if they've built their product to allow that to happen. But there's some that haven't done that yet. So be aware of that. The disk encryption may be a blocker as far as an in-place upgrade. And then kind of back to the topic of if I have a lot of applications that I want to upgrade all at the same time as I'm doing this upgrade. I need a new version of the antivirus, I need a new version of Office, I need a new version of this or that line of business application. Then at that case, you might get to the point where it's probably going to make more sense to do a wipe and load. You're going to wipe the operating system, install the operating system as a new operating system, install the new versions of the applications at that point, and then any drivers and packages that are required. So another case where you might want to consider that instead of an in-place upgrade.
Yeah, and on the applications piece, think about it in terms of just performance. If it's going to take you 5 hours to apply all of these different application changes during the setup, during the installation or the upgrade process, but you can blast an image out in 45 minutes. Well, I mean, clearly it makes sense at that point because I've got all these changes to just create a new image and blast that out because when you multiply that, 4 hours versus 45 minutes may not seem like a big deal, but when you multiply it by 1,000 machines, it adds up really fast.
Yep, for sure.
Well, talk about tens of thousands of machines. Now you got me thinking about, so how do I roll it out? How do I actually roll out the image and how do I patch them and things like that? What's the strategy and what's the model?
Well, in terms of rolling out new operating systems, certainly with the tools that we talked about, Configuration Manager and the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, two very good options for that if you want to customize that. I mean, certainly you can allow your users to do the upgrade on their own and just hope it works. But, most IT organizations want to have an opportunity to have better control of that. And then to apply or to make sure that the licensing is happening properly, of course, enterprise licensing if it's enterprise agreements and so on.
Now, all the experience that people have talked about is getting from internet and then it gets updated. They kind of surprised to get it updated. Now, so in an enterprise environment and as opposed to a commercial environment, in terms of the deployment model, what do we have? What kind of options do we have?
Well, there's actually one that I want to cover in a little bit more detail we haven't touched on yet. I touched on it when I talked about the three main options, and those were being the wipe and load, which is more traditional. We've been doing that for years. The newer and now recommended in-place upgrade, but that third one we called provisioning. And so that was that scenario where I told my employee, here's $2,000, go buy a machine, and then we're going to provision that machine as a company machine. This is a really good option. It means I don't have to do a fresh install of this operating system because the PC came with the operating system all set to go. And the nice thing about that is the hardware manufacturer has all the drivers in place. It all is guaranteed to work at that point because that's what the OEM built. They built it to work with their hardware. So now all I have to do is make it a company machine, or if it's my own machine, allow my company to do some management and apply policy if I need to have some light management for the sake of accessing company applications, company data, and so on. So there's a couple ways this can happen, actually. We can allow our users to drive it. So if again, that scenario where they went out and bought a machine, if it's a company-owned machine now, it's simply ready to be used, they can log into, or they can join that machine to Azure Active Directory, and the machine can be auto-enrolled, auto-provisioned with mobile device management. Policies can be applied to it. The SKU for enterprise can be applied to it, so it can be upgraded. It can be joined to a domain. This all can happen automatically, so the user really doesn't have to do anything other than know their email address and their password, and join it to an Azure Active Directory domain to make that all happen. Now, the IT pro could also do that provisioning. Let me go back to the user scenario. So that's a company-owned machine. If it's a user-owned machine, then the user logs into their brand new machine, they go into the settings, they say, I want to allow this machine to be managed and actually enroll it with my company. So create this connection to my work in order to allow my access to company applications. Keeping that partition from personal stuff, and the company's not going to have any access to the personal stuff, but you actually have the ability to enroll that device for some light management from your company. Now, if IT is provisioning the machine, you actually have a tool that you can use to create a provisioning package. It's kind of like an offline mobile device management policy that's being applied. You're making a package that includes all those policies, those configurations, those applications. And we're using a tool that's called the Windows Imaging and Configuration Designer. So that designer tool allows me to add all the pieces that are required. I can add the licensing for the Enterprise Edition, for example. So my package has a key that's required for then that to be upgraded from Pro to Enterprise. I can add applications. I can add the configuration of the domain membership. These are all things that can be part of that package. And then for my end user, that's as simple as receiving an email with that package and simply running it, or you as IT can deploy it however you would deploy under any other application and provision that machine pretty much automatically at that point.
All right, so I got Window in place and I configure Insider Ring or what? What was that about?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of businesses are concerned, and IT organizations certainly are concerned. Microsoft is coming out with more frequent upgrades. Updates are happening as they always have, right? But we have upgrades actually happening two or three times a year now with Windows. This notion of what we call Windows as a service doesn't mean that we're going to be charging you on a subscription basis. It's not what that is. That was a lot of confusion originally when we said, oh, by the way, you've got Windows free for the first year, and everybody's going, wait, you're going to charge me after that? Is that what the service means? No, it's a service model, okay? It's the notion that we can actually do these upgrades on a continual basis. And it's actually required that you maintain an up-to-date system. Now, before you get nervous about that, you need to understand how Windows is built. And this, I hope, will help you understand that by the time the builds of Windows reach this current branch, this thing has been tested really, really well. I mean, the way it works, and you see on a slide here, we actually have rings of building the operating system. So the engineering builds happen. There's maybe 1,000 users at Microsoft that are part of the engineering team of Windows, and they get a new build every day. Their changes are submitted, they're added to the build, and everybody's testing and working with the current build and dealing with the bugs and reporting bugs and so on, and hopefully fixing those bugs. Eventually it rolls out to an internal ring, and there's a bunch of volunteers. I've been on this ring as well. There's thousands of people at Microsoft that say, I'm okay with something that's a little bit less stable. I want to test it for the company and for our customers. And so we've got tens of thousands of people that actually are running it much earlier than it's actually being released to anybody in the general public. Eventually, those builds get to a point where, okay, we're going to get our insiders involved, and we have this great program called Windows Insiders. Man, if you're not a Windows Insider, you really need to get on this program. Or at least have someone at your company in this program, because it's a really good way to get an early taste of what's coming in the next current branch, the next major release or public release. We have a fast ring and a slow ring. So if you want to have some access to new stuff, but maybe not as cutting edge as everybody else, you can do that as well. But this Insider Preview branch is a really good way to allow you to try it out. And it's also really great for Microsoft and for everybody, because it gives so many more people a chance to try it out and find where the problems are on all different kinds of hardware. So it's not just thousands of people at Microsoft that are doing this testing. it's not just automated scripts that are testing and hoping we got all the scripting right. This is now millions of people, tens of millions of people that are actually running the product before it gets released to the general public. That's much better than we could have ever done internally and what we've ever done in the past. So by the time it reaches this current branch, most recent current branch again is, I think, build 10.586, is that correct? I forget the number, but I know it's, we're calling it version 1511 for 2015 November. This is the current branch that everybody's running on publicly. Now, as a business, you may decide, I'm not ready to run the current branch yet. I want to maybe have a few people running that. Maybe my IT team is running on the current branch, but I have a way, I want to be able to stage it out in rings of my own. And you actually have that, the ability to do that. So in either group policy or directly on the machines, you can actually defer the upgrade a certain amount of time. And so you could say through group policy, okay, these people in these OUs or these groups, they're going to get it maybe a little sooner than these other groups. You can also use it to temporarily defer. If, for example, my finance team, I don't want to mess with their machines at the end of the month. So I can actually set that in policy as well. Ideally and ultimately, you will have to go to the current branch, but you do have a number of months beyond when the current branch is released in order to make that decision of when it's the right time to do that. So hopefully that will give you a little more control over what's what's been tested, what's actually working, even in your own environments, what's okay with regard to your local applications, so that by the time everyone's up to speed, you're ready for the next one as it comes out.
Young, as we talk about service and updates every 3 months, there's something to consider here, and that is Microsoft has an enormous amount of experience in this. If you look at the platforms like Xbox, Xbox has been delivered as a service to millions of people for years, and they're doing, they're doing a fabulous job of it. Take another example, Azure. And really what they've done is Microsoft has taken all these great lessons that they've learned by distributing these cloud services and updating these cloud services on a regular basis, and they've brought that technology down to the desktop to make it easier for us. So, you were kind of harping a little bit on application compatibility in the beginning of this session, but if you think about it from a compatibility standpoint, this is actually much better, because look at what changes whenever you go, say, 4 or 5 years between operating system builds. You've got millions of lines of code, and you've got, all these different departments, all these different thousands or tens of thousands of developers working on different components and different parts of these projects. There is no way to fully test all that stuff together. Not physically possible. By moving to these rings and by moving to a known platform, that is everybody is always going to be on, from Windows 10 and beyond, is always going to be on a known platform. We can test every single iteration that's on the street with this methodology. It really makes it much easier for us, for Microsoft, and for our internal IT staffs, and for your IT staffs, our customers' IT staffs, to make sure that everything works well by setting up the process where you have these some people that are on earlier rings, and you always have these people in your organization that you trust to want to be on the leading edge or even the bleeding edge. Give them the power of being on the bleeding edge. Let them be, your Microsoft Insider Preview branch, right? Give them that power that they already want. Our customers in the IT field, they need to understand who the right people are for that, Insider Preview branch. They need to understand who the right people are for the current branch. And, we'll talk a little bit more about it in a minute, when we get into the current branch for business and beyond, what the right scenarios are for those. But the bottom line is, the person you would not want to have in the Microsoft Insider Preview branch, as an example, is the knucklehead in your organization that thinks he knows it all and complains about everything and finds every little problem, even if it's not a problem. He finds it because it's a problem for him, because they put that button in the wrong spot and he doesn't like it there. That's not the person that you want, in those early branches. Frankly, that's probably the person you want in the last branch. This whole branch idea is pretty awesome, and it helps Microsoft in a big way, but most importantly, it helps our customers in a big way, because gone is the whole application compatibility problem forever. Not only now, but forever.
Well, yeah, Kevin, I'm glad you. If I hear you correctly, so Microsoft had a chance to really test internally before they released to the public. When they released to the public, that's called current branch. And if you're listening egos, you know, live in the fast lane every day, you're a fast guy, you should get in the fast ring. But if you're playing slow dance every day, then you should get in the slow ring.
Well, the fast and slow. Yeah, so, fast and slow really has to do with the.
What about this? What about this? I'm a financial professional. I'm a healthcare provider. My environment has to be stable. You know, yeah. I don't want to in and out at different changes coming all the time. Or I'm in an assembly line. I have that kiosk machine. I need it for very simple operations there, and it's very predictable. I need it just stable and not kind of getting all this update. What do I do then?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up too. There is one additional deployment strategy that we should talk about, and I've got a slide here actually that shows kind of what a typical business might be distributing in terms of who's getting what versions, kind of as we were talking about previously. So yeah, there's going to be some people that are going to be on the insider branch. They're going to be in the fast or slow ring there. They're going to be the ones in your IT group that are really getting that early access. Then you have the main current branch, and maybe some of your users are on that, but maybe you want a little more control. So for your business, you're going to say majority of my users are going to be on the current branch for business. Now there is that scenario that you're just asking about, Young, that I've got a system that can't be updated frequently. I need it to be solid. I need it to be secured, stable. So we do have actually a SKU. It's actually a SKU, a version of Windows that you can buy, and it's called the long-term servicing branch version of Windows 10. Now there's not a lot of fluff in it. No store applications. It's not something that not something that an end user would use as their day-to-day machine, but it's a machine that you would use for that kiosk or for that heart monitor or for that air traffic control system. You get my drift. These are things that are really, really important that we need to know that this system is stable, solid, and secure, and I can't be upgrading it every 3 months. So that's what the long-term servicing branch is for. It's for those devices that need that stability.
And if you think about the long-term servicing branch from this standpoint, there are some cases where you might have to go through an 18-month or even a multi-year process, a two-year process of certifying your application to run on a particular device. In order to get that certification, you have to go through all this, you know, 18 months plus of testing. Well, you're not going to upgrade that application or that device, and you're not going to manage that, you know, going through 18-month process every 3 months. It's not physically possible. So those are the scenarios where you're really going to the long-term servicing branch. So you've got, you know, your high-risk scenarios or your long-term certification processes. Those environments that don't need, you know, desktop access, that don't need, you know, typical user, let me browse Internet Explorer or Edge, those are not the scenarios. But for those very slim scenarios, that's for the long-term servicing branch.
I see. I think I'm very much convinced. I only have one more question to ask you, because I mean, it appears to me we got, we have a good strategy, you know, planning IE with Windows 10 deployment together. We got pretty good application compatibility tools. We talk about that, different in-place upgrade to wipe and load or packaging. And now you talk about the servicing Windows as a service model. All this is good. Now, Windows 10 have so many different versions, right? I got laptop, I got tablet, I have big, Surface Hub, like 54 inches in my conference room. I have, you know, some developers, they started playing with my IoT devices. I have point of sale. I have all kinds of different type of a form factor and big and small machine in my enterprise. So for all this Windows 10, are these all applicable?
Oh, yes, actually it is. Because it's the same Windows 10 core. Depending on there are going to be differences with regard to components that are installed and different servicing that's available. But from the heart of it, I mean, for example, even an IoT device, even a small Raspberry Pi credit card size computer can be managed through group policy. I mean, it's crazy to think that, but yeah, it's because it's a Windows 10 device. So you may have different components that you need to add for those smaller devices, but yeah, for the bigger devices, depending on the device, depending on the applicability of certain tools, yeah. I mean, it's the idea being that Windows 10 is Windows 10. You'll be able to run universal Windows apps on all those devices, or be allowed to make those devices run those applications. I should say, actually more correctly say, make those applications run on those devices, because it's Windows 10 at the heart of it.
Well, thank you, Kevin. That's great. And so I'm in. I'm ready to deploy. So, gentlemen, where do I get the information? Where is your instruction I can follow?
Well, we're going to have some great resources. You've probably seen the resource links already by this video if you're watching this video online. So take advantage of those links and links to our blogs and our resources. But there are a couple that I do want to point out. We have great planning tools, so planning documentation for Windows 10 deployment. If you're interested in learning more about the servicing model for Windows 10 ongoing as we release and how that all works and how to manage your own internal current branch for business rings in your own business, you can go there. We've got deployment guides on IE11, so if you really need to get to IE11, and again, that's something you should probably do first, I should probably put that at the top of the slide, you want to get to IE11 with the deployment guide. And I do want to give credit to Michael Niehaus. Michael Niehaus is one of our experts at Microsoft. I'm drawing a blank on his exact title, probably program manager or something like that, but he is Mr. Deployment at Microsoft. He delivered a session at Microsoft Ignite in Australia a couple months ago, and I actually borrowed these slides from
leveraged
research, right? I leveraged Michael's content from that great session, but I put a link in here that goes directly to his recording. So if you want more detail in a very familiar topic, this is a really good way. He's got a lot of additional information there that you really want to see. So go view that recording from Ignite in Australia.
You know, Kevin, you're full of it. You're full of IT.
I'm full of IT. Thank you.
and you know what? I know, Dan, you have a lot of hands-on lab and instruction and PowerShell and all that. So I want to make sure I get your phone number. And so from your website, like IT Pro Guru or something, where is your phone number? I've been looking for that. And I'm getting ready to deploy. So
I'm really easy to get in touch with. I'll tell you how to do that. On my blog, itproguru.com, I do have a contact me there page. That is that's one way to get in touch with me. The other way is via Twitter. Really, our role is not a technical support role. So there are lots of places where you can get technical support. I actually recommend that people go to the forums, the TechNet forums. So if you just go into your Bing browser and Internet or Edge, whatever, and type and go to Bing and search on TechNet forum, you'll see a whole slew of places where you can get support. And there's actually a deployment forum out there. So for deploying Windows, I would ask the question there, because quite frankly, even if I gave you my phone number, you'd never reach me, because I'm never in the office ever. And even if I gave you my cell phone, you'd never reach me there, because it's never on, because I'm always on stage talking to or talking to customers, and I don't answer when I'm on stage. So, the TechNet forums are a great way to get your questions answered very, very, very quickly. Because it's not only people like me and people like Kevin that are out there monitoring those forums. It's also our MVPs, other insiders at Microsoft. There's a lot of people out there answering those, and other, you know, customers that are out there using this stuff, you know, they're doing as a solid, and they're out there monitoring and helping their buddies, by answering some of those questions as well. So TechNet forums from Bing, that's the way to go to get support.
Guys, thank you so much. I know for all your IT pros out there, you want them to talk forever, but I gotta go. I want to deploy Windows 10. And also, by the way, bada bing, bada boom, you can deploy Windows 10. I gotta throw that in. So, all right. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. It's a wealth of information. Help us to deploy Windows 10. And for all you guys out there, I would definitely follow these guys, follow their blog, reach out then in social media, and ask questions in that IT Pro forum. And so with that, we're going to conclude this episode. And thank you guys so much for coming up. For all you guys out there, we're going to see you next time.
Great. Thanks, John. Thanks, Kevin.